I know something about you because I know something about me, and we're all humans, so I think we share this quality. It's that we love scandalous stories. It's okay. You can admit it. It's church. You want to be honest here, right? You love to hear when a story breaks and it's like, oh my goodness, that's horrible. Tell me more, right? That's typically what we say. It's like, man, I can't believe that happened, but we want to know all the details about how that happened and why that happened and how could he and why would she? That's why you have social media. You scan your feeds to see people that are more messed up than you. Makes you feel good about you, right? Especially going into a new year. It's like, wow, my year wasn't as bad as their year. News thrives on scandalous stories. It's, hey, who can we talk about? What celebrity did this? Church world, I mean, what pastor did that? How did that go down? Businesses, you know, embezzlement and scandals and all these different stories that come out. You love scandals. I love scandals. We have shows about scandals. TV generates new content around scandals. So scandals are all around us. And as I was considering this final talk for 2017, and we're actually launching a new series today that I'll talk about in a couple minutes, I figured, why not tell a scandalous story? Because everyone loves scandals, and it helps us lean in a little bit more. And so I'm going to tell you a pretty scandalous story in a couple minutes, but I realized in order for me to tell a scandalous story, I need to go back to the dictionary to define scandal. Because typically when we hear the word scandal in our culture, in our context, and when we hear about scandalous stories, it's usually involving some sort of an affair or some kind of sexual content to it. And so I went to the book that tells us what words mean, the dictionary, right? It's a good book. And this is exactly what a scandal is defined as. It's an action or event regarded as morally or legally wrong and causing general public outrage. That's why the dictionary is so smart, because I don't know most of those words. So I had to look up those words too. But I want you to see, scandal is not just confined to sexual scandals. So let's break this down for people like me here. It's when you expect an outcome based on the law, based on what's morally right, based on what should be. Hey, this should be the outcome. This is what we expect. This is how it's supposed to go. That's what we want. And it doesn't go that way. Hey, well, we've got a scandal. Hey, the law says it should go this way. This is what's legal. This is what we expect. The law says they should be declared guilty, but they're said they're innocent. Well, there's a scandal there. And so that's the context that I want you to have as we go into this scandalous story. It should be that way. It's supposed to be that way. How come it's this way? Why did it turn out like that? So with that in your mind, as you consider the story of God, as you consider Jesus, and maybe you have some church background, maybe you don't, as you consider faith, as you consider the cross, or you consider other people who might call themselves Christians, be honest, do you normally think of scandal? Do you normally, if someone were to say, hey, what's the story of God all about? What's God all about? Is scandal a word that we run to, that we lean into? You can do it this way. If you were to say God is and fill in the blank, sure, a lot of us would respond with a very similar four-letter word. God is love. That's typically what we lean into in Western culture. God is love. And so if you're sharing the story of God with someone, if you're living out the story, someone asks you, hey, why do you believe in God? Well, God is love. You're using a definition that you've come to understand and you've come to know because you have an experience, because you have a past, because you have a story, because there's something about your life that has said love is a good definition to grab onto when it comes to the story of God. God is love. The problem with that is that if you've never experienced the love of God, or if maybe your story looks a little messy, a little broken, you might use a different word. Hey, God is mean, right? I've seen God at work in my life and in my family's life, and when I'm going to tell someone the story of God, and they're going to say, hey, why do you or why do you not go to church, believe in God, read the Bible, connect with him, pray? Well, that's because God's mean, because you have an experience and you have a story that has helped shape your definition of God's story. So maybe he's mean because you expected your marriage to go a certain way and it didn't. You prayed together and he loved God and you loved God and you thought it was supposed to work. God is mean because you put everything you had into a financial plan or to a business plan or to some goal for your life. And I mean, you prayed the prayers, you even fasted to get God's attention. It was like, this is going to work out really well. And it didn't. And God's mean. Right? My kids understand that word mean right now. I have a 3.5-year-old, 1.5-year-old. So they know when each other's being mean to each other. Usually it's the older one to the younger one right now. But my daughter, as soon as she gets a little older, I'm worried for my son because she's feisty. So I just pray for him already when she can finally realize you took my toy from me. But we have stories like that. Or maybe for you, you consider God, and as for you, God is angry at you. You've only felt him angry. Hey, when I think of the story of God, God is distant. Because you've prayed and you thought God was supposed to respond. And maybe you read the Bible, you hear stories of amazing things happening. Or friends of yours, they talk about, hey, I pray and I hear God and I feel God. And you're like, I think that's gas. I don't know what you're feeling, but I don't get the same sensation that you do. God seems distant. You consider God is distant. And so all of us, you have a working definition. And here's what I don't want to do today. I don't want to steal your definition from you because truthfully, I think it's beautiful. I think that you have a definition of who God is because you have a unique story. You have a unique experience. And the fact that you're here today, you're saying, I want to take a step closer to God. I want to figure God out. You don't have to believe in God to come here. So maybe I don't believe in him, but I sure would like to. So you're on a faith journey. I'm on a faith journey. And all of us in this space, we have our definitions. And there could be other words. It could be grace. It could be mercy. Whatever it is for you, friend. But what I want you to consider today is, what if when someone asks you about the story of God, you pull out the word scandal? It's like, what? Scandal? That's your definition? Yeah, God's story is scandalous. So what's scandal? Oh, it's when you expect a certain outcome based on moral or legal reasons and you get something different. Okay, how does that work? That's what we're going to talk about today. And here's why I think this matters so much for you. So you have a definition of God's story right now, love, anger, distant. Maybe it's rule keeping, right? When you think of God, I think of God as the rule master because you grew up in an experience where it's very religious. And if you do this, he likes you. If you don't, you need to be afraid. You need to pray a certain amount of times, do certain things. So you have your story. I have my story. You have your words and I have my words. But I think the word scandal is so beautiful because it reveals the beauty of God's story. This word scandal, if you can grab onto this today and you're closing the year and starting a new one, and you're saying, when I think of God's story, I think of a scandal, that word enables you to recognize the power and the beauty of God's story. And those are two amazing qualities of the story of God. You need to understand why God's story is so scandalous, because it involves you, because you're part of the scandal. You didn't even know this. You have a scandalous story about you, right? It's like, well, don't tell anybody. We're going to tell each other today, okay? But it's a good story. So what's really cool is Jesus was, in my opinion, one of the best storytellers. He always told stories to explain lessons, to explain teaching points. When Jesus would talk to maybe a crowd like this, he would tell a story. And people who were leaning in and were listening to the story, they'd realize, hold on, this isn't just a story. There's something here. There's something you're trying to teach us in this story. I see what you're doing, Jesus. You're a good storyteller. So since Jesus is a way better storyteller than I am, I simply want to read you one of the stories that Jesus told today. And I want to read this one because I think out of Jesus' stories, this one grabs onto the word scandal in such an amazing way, in such a great way. You'll miss it if you're not looking for it, but now I've spent 10 minutes just prepping you for it. So we're going to look for the scandal in the story. In fact, because I know you love scandal so much, we're going to read the end of the story first, and then we're going to work back up to it. All right, we're going to go right to the scandal, and then we're going to... You ever see a TV show do that? It's annoying, right? My wife and I, we were watching a series recently, and we were on an episode, and it came up, and it was the end of the episode, but we didn't know, but it was at the beginning of the episode. So we watch, and we're like, oh my goodness, and I pause, I'm like, did we miss an episode? I have no, this, we didn't see this happen. So then I'm looking at the last one, and I'm like, okay, let's just wait, and then next scene, like 6 hours earlier, I'm like, they got me again, 6 hours earlier. So we're going to do like six verses earlier on this one. We're going to read Luke chapter 14 together. And because you can't wait and I can't wait, I want to read you the scandalous part. And then we're gonna work our way back through it. So Luke chapter 14, verse 23 is where the scandal takes place. And again, this is a story that Jesus told, so the characters are made up to explain it, but there's a truth in it. So his master said, "Go out into the country lanes behind the hedges and urge anyone you find to come so that the house will be full." Doesn't that sound like a scandal? No. Like, I think Pastor picked the wrong verse. It doesn't sound like a scandal because you don't know the context of it. It's like watching that episode and I'm totally confused. But I want you to remember this part. So his master said, "Go out and urge anyone," that anyone is big for a reason, "urge anyone you find to come so that the house will be full." So let's go back. Let's rewind time. Verse 1 of that same chapter. One Sabbath day, Jesus went to eat dinner in the home of a leader of the Pharisees, and the people were watching him closely. Let me just give you a little cultural context, because it's 2017. And maybe you're going to have a New Year's Eve party later, and you've invited some people, and you have guests that you hang out with regularly. The way that we hang out with guests today is a little different than how Middle Eastern culture 2,000 years ago hung out with guests. See, when you invite guests over, you typically do it out of relational closeness. Well, I'm friends with them, they're family members, I want to get to know them, so they're going to come over. It doesn't really do anything for your status, right? You can post and tag, like, "I'm with all these people at," and like do all that, but it's still that status, but not like your professional who I am status. Now, 2,000 years ago in a Middle Eastern culture, who you invited validated you. It actually helped your worth. So if you were someone of influence and you were someone of prominence, well, you invited certain type of people to your gatherings, and by them showing up, they kind of put their stamp on you and say, "Okay, I approve of this person. I validate this person." And so with that, there's two sides. One, you're very careful on who you invite, because you don't want to invite someone that's going to lower your worth, lower your status. So you invite people that are at the same level, if not higher. I mean, if you can get someone higher to come, that's great for you. It's like, "Oh my goodness, Jesus is going to his house? It's a big deal," right? You don't invite someone lower. And then if that person shows up, that's a very big deal, right? If they don't show up, it kind of hurts. It's like, okay, don't let anybody know that Jesus didn't come to the party. Let's just keep that. He was never invited, right? That's how you would play that off. So as it's a Sabbath day and Jesus goes to eat at one of these religious leaders' houses, the religious leaders were called Pharisees, as Jesus goes there to eat with this person, this is a big, big deal. I mean, you got to think, even today, even in 2017, if Jesus were to come to your house, right, how big a deal would that be? You post it on social media, because that's doing a little something for your status. Like, Jesus is coming over. Jesus said, yes, this is so cool. Jesus is coming over. You care about that. I care about that. This religious leader cared about that. And people are watching because they're very interested. It's, hey, I can't believe that Jesus is coming over to this guy's house. And while Jesus is a guest, so you got a lot of context. There's scandal. There's the invite. There's the validation. Jesus decides to tell this story at this party. And here's where it starts. Verse 16, a man prepared a great feast and sent out many invitations. And when the banquet was ready, he sent his servant to tell the guests, "Come, the banquet is ready." Okay. So here's something else we don't understand. The invite process 2,000 years ago. The closest thing we have to this is if you were to invite someone to a wedding. So when you invite them to a wedding, you send it out and you typically put the little respond back card in there and you stamp it, right? If you really like them, you put the stamp on so they don't have to worry about it. So you put that on there and then it says the M with the blank line, which I always get confused over, okay? I'm just going to throw that out there. Do I write R first and then, like, do I carry on the M? But you send it out, you invite them, they respond back, and maybe you already have chicken, fish on there. That's really fancy, right? So you're picking your dinner, which is hard for me because I need to know the day of. I'm just kind of venting for a second. Is that okay? So that's our system, our process of inviting to like a fancy party. Otherwise, it's just Facebook event, word of mouth, text message. That's typically how we invite. Now, what they did in this culture was this. Notice that there was a great feast that the man was preparing as a banquet. So Jesus is letting us know this person has got some money, he's got some wealth. This isn't just a house gathering, this is a big party. And what they would do to invite people is they would send out messengers, no text messaging, not Facebook Messenger, like messengers would go out and tell them, hey, you're invited to the party. Here's when it is. Can you come? They would tell them there, yes, I can make it. I'll be there. Okay, good. I'm going to go back and tell the host. Okay, we've got like 20 people coming to this thing. It's going to be awesome. Then when the party was all ready, the day of the event, a party's ready, here it is, go tell them it's ready. You go and tell them, and they show up. They walk back with the messenger. So it's a little different, but you got to understand the context. So in Jesus's story, this guy does what he's supposed to do. You already know when it is. I told you it's coming up. It's going to be in a week. It's going to be in a month. It could do a year. It's going to be in a year. But my guy's going to come back and tell you when it's ready, and you're going to come back with him because you said yes to the fish dish, so we're going to make fish for you. Okay, okay, this is how it works. So in the story, the messenger goes, and he says, go tell them the banquet is ready. What happens next? Verse 18, but they all began making excuses. You've done this. One said, I've just bought a field, and I must inspect it. Please excuse me. Another said, I have just bought 5 pairs of oxen. I want to try them out. Please excuse me. And another said, I just got married, so I can't come. Now, I don't know if that was a knock on his wife. Jesus doesn't go into that of why he can't come. But here's when you've done this. You've done this when you said you were going to go to someone's house, and then it's the day of, and you don't feel like going to someone's house. Mm-hmm. Right? You're like, I just want to stay in my pajamas. I can't believe we have to go out. And then your wife gives you that look that says if you didn't want to go, you shouldn't have said yes in the first place. Right? Right? Okay. We saw it. We've seen the look. So that's what these guys are doing here. But again, I want to give you some cultural context because their excuses are so bogus. And the original listeners would have understood that. See, we're not blown away by their excuses because this isn't 2,000 years ago, Middle East. But as Jesus tells the story, the listeners would have been laughing throughout that. Like, really, that's your excuse? That's insane. No one does that. Here's why. What was the first one there? He said, I had just bought a field and I need to inspect it. Okay. Listeners would have been like, you don't buy first, inspect later. You inspect first and then you buy it. It's an excuse that doesn't hold any weight to it. And the next one is even better. I bought 5 pairs of oxen. I just want to try them out. Okay, 5 pairs of oxen means you've got a lot of money to make that purchase. So you're not even going to be the guy to try them out. Your servants are going to try them out. You're not going to go out there into the field and walk your 5 pairs of oxen. You have hands to do that. Now you're laughing because now you get it. And again, you don't buy them and try them. You try them and then you buy them. There's a big difference there. And so these excuses hold no weight. They're just lame excuses. And the last one, too, it seems legitimate. Well, I just got married. What are you going to do to the guy? Here's the problem. Their culture, they knew exactly when they were getting married, just like we do today. And when you got the invite to the party, you knew when your wedding was. You knew when your marriage feast was. In fact, if this is a great banquet, the host is probably invited to your wedding, too, so he knows that. So none of these excuses are actually bearing any weight. You know what these excuses are doing? They're insulting the host. They're really insulting the host. And as Jesus' audience is listening to this, they're all sitting there saying, I can't believe these guys would say that to this guy. I mean, this is a great feast. This is a big deal to be invited to something like this. And you're going to respond with something like that? You got an invite and you're going to throw that out there to say, here's why I can't come? And these guys are blown away. And now, here's where it gets scandalous. Okay, so we're getting ready for our verse, but here's where it starts to turn in a different direction. Because all these guys of prominence and 5 oxen and just married guy and I've got a field now guy, all these great guys are invited to a great feast. And then the host does something very scandalous, something that legally and morally he should not do. So what does he say? After they make their excuses, verse 21, the servant returned and told his master what they had said. The master was furious, rightfully so. I mean, this is a big deal. There's a lot of food that's been prepared. And said, go quickly into the streets and alleys of the town and invite the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame. Don't miss the scandalous part of this story. The host has prepared a very great feast for very great people, for very prominent people. But the prominent people said, hey, I'm too prominent to show up. I've got a field. I've got oxen. I've got a wedding. I can't come to your party. I know I said I would, but I'm actually not going to now. In which case, the master has a couple options to do. He could actually bring them to court legally. He could do that culturally. Because it's, hey, you said you would, and now you didn't. And we're gonna talk about this in the town circle, and someone may get stoned. Not like the drug kind, like the dead kind. Right, so just it's 2017, just clarify. Right, so it's like, well, this is a great party. Right, so we could do that, or I could do something that no one expects. I could do something that's legally inappropriate, that morally no one would ever anticipate. I know what I'll do. I'll create a little bit of a scandal. Hey, why don't you go out and find the cripple, find the blind, find the lame? See how specific Jesus is in his story? Because again, 2,000 years ago, as they're listening, they know every one of those people are completely marginalized, are completely pushed aside, are told you have no worth, you have no value, you're not accepted here. It's based on what you've done with your life. It's based on your physical appearance. You can't fit in. This is a caste system. So you're low, 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 low. And Jesus says, go find them and invite them. That's what happens in this story. Go find them and invite them, to which the audience is saying, are you kidding me? You don't do that. Them, they don't show up to parties. Do you know how much that's going to hurt the host's reputation? They have some cripples there, some lame people there. What is that? And then he takes it a step further. This is the part we read. After the servant had done this, he reported there's still room for more. Here's our verse. So his master said, go out into the country lanes behind the hedges and urge anyone you find to come so that the house will be full. And there's one more part we're going to read to the story. It doesn't fully end there. But I want you to realize the story Jesus is telling. And where he's telling it, he's at a party where important people have been invited, where he's gone to a religious leader's house. These are great people. These are people of influence. This is, hey, I've got status, and we invite certain people because it validates us. And Jesus at that party tells this story, fictional. But there's a big truth behind it. There was a man who had a feast kind of like this one. You guys invited me, and I came, and other people came. But could you imagine if we didn't come, what would you do? Because the host in this story says, I'm going to invite everybody. And it's a scandal. And the people that are listening, and they're falling off their chairs. You don't do that. Now, here's what you can't miss. In order for the host to invite these people, the host has to lose. He has to lose to invite them there. He has to lose his reputation with the town because now they're hearing about, oh, this guy had a great party and he killed all his fat and cast and it's awesome. It's a banquet. It's amazing. And he's got them there. We can't trust him. Look at his reputation. It's dragged through the mud. Why would he invite those people? The host loses in this story to make sure the invites gain. The host puts his reputation on the line and says, here's what it is. I'm going to lose so that anyone can come to this party, so that this house can be full. I don't even know those guys. Only thing I know about them is they never get invited to a party. They're not supposed to go to parties. Get them in here. I'll take it, the host would say. My reputation will be tarnished so that they could be elevated, so that they could be brought up, so that they could actually feel some worth at this party. And this is the story of God. This is Jesus telling a fictional story to teach you and I and his listeners about how scandalous the story of God is. See, because as we navigate our lives, our relationships are built on worth and value. If you matter to others, then you matter. If you look a certain way, if you have certain qualities, certain degrees, certain accomplishments, achievements, you get the invite. You get promoted. You get acknowledged. You get a pat on the back, you get a thumbs up, literal or Facebook, right? You have people that say, hey, bravo, good job. But it's based on your merit. It's based on your worth. And we apply that same horizontal way of relating oftentimes to God. And that's where I said at the beginning, for some of you, you think God is all about rules. And so if you do certain thing, God loves you. And if you don't, then he doesn't, because we're so used to relating to each other based on what we do. And the story of God is so scandalous in that all people are invited in because the host is willing to lose to make that happen. Because while we normally think, well, you should deserve this and you should earn this, and to get God's love, you've got to give something up. I mean, some of you think, I got to go to church a certain amount of times. I've got to pray for a certain amount of times. I got to read this book. I got to give money. I got to do something to prove myself to God, right? Isn't that how it works? No, because it's scandalous. Because that would be the expected outcome. Good people get in, rich people get in, religious people get in. But the story of God is actually all people are invited in. Because the host, Jesus, was willing to lose. And yes, Jesus lost his reputation, and yes, Jesus was lied about, and at a court hearing, he was slandered, but he lost even more than that. He lost his friends. He lost his physical appearance. He lost his life so that you could be brought in, so that you could have an invite. He lost so you could gain, and it's scandalous. Because you shouldn't deserve it, and I shouldn't deserve it. But Jesus does it for you. Jesus does it for me. He does it for us. And when you understand the scandal of God's story, and you realize what should have been was not because God said, I'll lose so they can come in. Legally and morally, oh, they're bad people, so they're out. No, 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 no. All people are invited into this. All people get an invite because Jesus lost. It becomes scandalous, and you start to see the power and the beauty of it. Now, Jesus doesn't end his story there. There's one more sentence. He says, or rather the master, for none of those I first invited will get even the smallest taste of my banquet. Now, that part's a little hard to swallow. And remember where Jesus was when he told this. It's like, hold on, Jesus. How come? How come none of those who were first invited, how come they don't get to come in? I mean, why not? That's not fair. I thought this was a fair thing. I thought that everybody gets in. How come now they don't get to get in? Oh, here's why. Here's why it's not that they don't get to get in because Jesus is saying, you do and you don't, you do and you don't. It's because they refuse the invitation. There's nowhere in that story that not every single person got an invite, but there are two points where someone responded and someone didn't. And here's what I want you to get from this story. Only you can stand in the way between you and God. Only you get to stand in the way between you and God. Don't worry about it. It's just making the building hotter for us. Right? Only you can stand in the way between you and God. That's a big deal because maybe as you survey your story, you look around, you say, how come they get to know God? How come they believe in God? How come their life seems like they have this hope and this promise still stands thing? Well, you get the same opportunity. We all do. We are all of us invited into the story of God because Jesus, the host, was willing to lose. But only you get to stand in the way of that. That's the beauty of being human. That's the beauty of free will and choice. You get to respond. So my question to you as we end this year and we start a new one is, how have you responded to the story of God? How have you responded to God's invitation of saying, I will lose so that you can gain. I will suffer loss so that you can experience victory and so that you can win. And I know what kinds of wells up in contexts like this, church context. Don't feel guilt. Don't feel fear. Don't feel threats. Maybe you've experienced that before in religious settings. You felt a little, well, I'm kind of guilted into this, so I guess I have to. I feel a little afraid because if I don't, I mean, what's going to happen? I guess I might as well. Just fire insurance, security, just keep it safe, okay? I'll just say yes, sign a card, raise the hand, say the prayer, whatever it is. But there's none of that in this story. The host didn't threaten anybody. He was upset that they didn't say yes because he wanted them to enjoy the party. Man, I can't believe they're going to miss this. This is some good duck, right? Duck is, you always order the duck because that's not something we normally make, right? So this is good food. I can't believe they said no to this. But you know what? We'll invite some other people. I remember 18 years ago, 1999, maybe you remember 1999, New Year's Eve, Y2K fears, right? Come on. So for me, I was in a church culture that night, and I can still remember being terrified out of my mind. About 10 years old, it was Y2K. I mean, in just a couple minutes, computers were going to destroy our lives. Terminator, right? Where's Arnold? Right. So this is what's going on in my mind. But I have a religious culture that says, hey, there's a good chance Jesus is going to come back, and you're probably going to, you're not going to make it because you know what you did yesterday. That was fear. There was guilt. And I mean, we had all-night prayer, so I'm like, my eyes aren't closed. I'm watching the clock in the back. I'm like, just get to midnight, and the second it does, I'm looking around. And as long as the good people are still here, I'm good, man. Like, I am good. And as we're on New Year's Eve 2017, 18 years later, I don't want you going into this year with fear like that. You shouldn't be afraid to say, I really hope God doesn't come back. I really hope I don't die. I really hope I'm all right with God. I really hope I can know this thing. I mean, how do I know if he loves me? How do I know? How do I know? Well, here's how you know. There's an invite. The question is, did you say yes? Jesus suffered loss so that you could discover the love of God. And if you said, you know what, I want to lean into the love of God and I recognize I needed Jesus to lose so that I could gain, then you're invited in. And you say, yeah, I want to know that. And you have opportunity to finish 2017 so strong. Say, I'm going into a new year, a new day. Maybe I'll see it, maybe I won't. But what I do know is your promise still stands. What I do know is you're faithful. And what I do know is because the host lost, I gained. And that is the story of God. It's scandalous. My question for you is, do you know it today? Is it changing your story? Is it changing your life? Not changing in that you don't get sick and relationships are restored and money's flowing in, but in the midst of brokenness, you have a hope, you have a peace, you have a promise that is standing. That is the story of God. And today, if you want to lean into the story, you want to say, you know what? I'm taking a step. I'm responding. Well, let's call it this. There's a party invite card in the chair in front of you. It's a gray card. It says step. And I'm going to invite you to take that out. It's right in front of you. And there's a spot that says discover Jesus. Discover God. Discover Jesus. That's you checking off and saying, I want to lean into him. I want to know him. And today, if you've never taken a step towards Jesus and you've never responded to the invitation of God's story, and maybe you've never understood how scandalous it is, and you've never understood your part in it, and your beautiful privilege to say yes or to say no, today you could say yes, but please don't do it out of guilt, don't do it out of fear, don't do it out of threats. Do it out of love for God, who has said, I'm bringing you into a new story. It's powerful. So I'm going to close out in prayer in just a minute, and I want you to take that moment to fill out that card. Hand it to me or drop it in one of those boxes so this week I can send you an email, connect with you, and just celebrate that first step towards discovering God's love. Now, we are in the context of a series called Bring. And what happened, why this series came up, is that a couple months ago, I started asking people in this space and other people outside of this space, hey, when's the last time you invited someone to church? Just casually. When's the last time you invited someone? And it was funny, I kind of got the same answer from a lot of different people. It was, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know when I invited someone. And it got me thinking, wow, if we don't know, then maybe we need to realize how powerful it is to bring people. And I wanted to start this series because I want you to realize this is the story that you are both bringing to people and that you are bringing them to. And how can we know such a scandalous story and not share it with people? And not say, I got to bring you into this. You have got to discover the scandalous love, the scandalous grace of God. And so this is week one of Bring. And next week, we're going to talk about how you never know who it is that you bring. In fact, I'm going to introduce you to someone that is the result of why you are here today, no matter who you are. You are in this space today because of someone who brought someone to Jesus, and that's why we are here. And so you never know who you're going to bring, but this is an exciting series for you as we start this new year to say, you know what, 2018, I want to bring people the scandalous story of God. In 2018, I really want to bring people to this space so they can discover how scandalous God's love is for them. So that's where we're going. I want to wish you guys a happy new year and thank you for coming out today. And I want to close in a time of prayer. As I pray, grab that step card. If that's you today and you say, I want to start this year off knowing God, taking my first step towards him, respond yes to the invitation. Let's pray together. Heavenly Father, thank you that your love is scandalous. Thank you that Jesus lost so that we could gain. Thank you that all people are invited in, that this isn't just for the rich, just for the good, just for those who seem to be worth it. This is for everyone. And we thank you for the privilege we have to say yes, to say no. And Father, I pray today that for those who hear this, that we would consider saying yes to your son, Jesus, that we would realize it is the greatest story ever told. It is the story that changes our stories. It is the story that was created at a high price so that we could know you. And so, Father, we commit ourselves to you. The end of this year, the start of a new one. May we be bringers who bring the message of Jesus to others. In his name we pray, amen.